Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Speaking of Translation. I'm Eve Baudu.
And I'm Corinne McKay. Thanks for joining us.
So before we get started today, we wanted to give our listeners a little update about what we've been up to in these crazy times. So I'll go first, and then Corinne will share with you. So I'm excited to say that I'll be on two podcasts coming up in September. I'll be on the Smart Habits for Translators, which is a really wonderful podcast, and I'm sure many of our listeners listen to, and if you don't, you should be listening to it. So Smart Habits for Translators. So I'll be talking about one of my favorite topics, as you all know, maintaining your second language, and also some in the related topic of bilingualism. I'll be addressing that. Then I'll also be on a publishing industry podcast, which is called the Make Books Travel Podcast, and that's hosted by Marlene Seegers, and I'll be talking about translation issues that are related to publishing. So I'm super excited about that too. And then one more thing for the Translators Book Club that I host, I will be interviewing the translator of the current book that we're discussing, which is a book called Family Lexicon in English. That's what it's called. It was translated from the Italian. And I will be interviewing her on our Zoom discussion in August. And I'm super excited about that because she is actually a well-known translator for kind of significant highfalutin Italian works. So I just confirmed that interview with her today. So I'm really happy about that.
Awesome.
And as for translation projects, I recently was asked to translate a book chapter about philosophy and technology. So I think that goes well with my background for an academic press. And so it was written by a French academic and philosopher on those topics. So I'm super excited about that.
Very cool.
So yeah. So Corinne, tell us what you have to share.
Yeah. So, my translation work has been pretty stable. I'd say really it's like neither up nor down, which is good right now.
Yeah.
My interpreting work is down by a lot because my primary slash really only interpreting client is the Colorado State Court System. And I honestly had not looked for any other interpreting work because I was so busy with that before the pandemic. But the Colorado courts have gone all remote and very pared down. So they're really just trying to do like short status hearings remotely. So there have been no like trials or motions hearings or mediation sessions or the longer stuff I usually interpret. So that is down by a lot. My online courses are booming because, you know, we're all looking for things to do and it's a good time for professional development, which I'll talk about later on too. And right now, for most of the month of August, I'm translating a book, which is a triathlete autobiography that I'm very excited about.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I'm also taking a two-week conference interpreting class, the Cambridge Conference Interpreting course, and we're actually doing this because this is my day off. We're doing the podcast today because it's so I'm literally in the middle of that. And I also, I guess my other development is I finally accepted that I am not going to feel safe going back to my old co-working office anytime soon. It's basically just one big room with a, you know, large number of desks, no walls, nothing.
It was a cool room, but yeah, in the pandemic time, maybe not so cool.
I know. I mean, isn't that the story of life right now? Is everything, lots of things that seemed like an advantage before the pandemic are now the very reason you can't do that thing. So just this week, I sort of, you know, made my peace with that situation and signed a lease until January on a very small private office. So this was my first week working there. And so far, so good. It's walking distance from my house, which is really nice. And for anyone in a similar situation, if you too would love to not be working at your kitchen table after 5 months, because my complication is that I no longer have an office in my house because I have worked at co-working offices for so long, it is a good time to make a deal with a person.
I was just thinking that as you said that, that it probably was, they were happy to get someone to fill the space probably.
Correct. So I had this theory that if I waited a little bit, that prices on small private offices would probably drop to around what I was paying for the co-working office, which turned out to be correct. Like specifically people like psychotherapists, massage therapists, et cetera, who maybe have multi-year leases on small private offices and really cannot work in person right now. And this is actually less than I was paying for my co-working office.
Oh, wow.
And it's very nice. You know, it's small, but it's a very nice private office. And it's actually $100 a month less than I was paying for my co-working office.
Oh, nice. Yeah, nice. Like you said, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Nothing. I was just going to say about the idea of, you said if you have an office in your home or not, that when we, I think I said before, when we moved, I purposely had an office built in. So right. There's, you know, different situations. But I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, but I've been, I haven't been to the co-working office since about March 15th. And I have been working at a desk in our living room, which is suboptimal. Mm-hmm. So I'm now at the little private office. And so that's my update.
Great,
so, awesome. Eve, how about if you introduce the topic for today's episode?
Yeah, so today on Speaking of Translation, we are going to address the topic of networking and then ... in times of pandemic. So, you know, as we've all seen, there's pretty much been zero in-person networking events for months, you know, and we don't know. I mean, we personally, but nobody knows, I guess, what the future will bring. And me personally, anyway, I'm not optimistic that things will turn around, you know, anytime soon. So I guess that depends on what everybody's definition of soon is. But fortunately, technology makes it possible to continue to network with current and new colleagues alike. So that's a good thing. Yay for technology.
Yep.
And so I think some of us may feel like we've had our fill of Zoom meetings. You know, that was a quick trend, right? Then, you know, and in the beginning of April, we're all like, yay, Zoom. And now we're like, oh, Zoom.
It seemed like such a novelty. And now it's like, oh, gag me.
So some things, right, in the pandemic seem like it's a 10-year, and, you know, oh, it feels like this week was 10 years. And then other times we feel like that was a quick trend that went through fast. But, you know, there still are ways to use online networking to our advantage. And so to kick things off for this topic, Corinne, I know that you have been very enthusiastic lately about some online networking that you've been doing. So could you tell us what you like about it, all about it? And I'm kind of interested in, too, how does it differ from what you originally thought it might be, if at all, or kind of compare and contrast and compare
to
the real world?
Interesting question. So, right, like everyone else, I really, really, really miss the in-person world. you know, my parents live near us, and I haven't even hugged my mom since March. So we see each other, but only sitting outside distantly. So I think, but at the same time, I think unless you're going to just, you know, be depressed, it's really important to embrace the opportunities that the shift to more online activities has offered us. And in my case, that mostly focuses on online training, both as a trainer and as a participant, although I have some thoughts on online networking as well. Mm-hmm. So as I've talked about before on our podcast, I've done some intensive training over the past 2 years with the goal of working professionally as a French interpreter in addition to my translation work. So I passed the Colorado Court Interpreter certification exam about a year ago.
But the
next step, and I love court interpreting, actually, but the next step I'd like to take is to train for conference interpreting. Mm-hmm. But a major obstacle is the lack of conference interpreter training in the U.S., and it would be not impossible, but time-consuming and expensive for me to go to Europe, which is where most of that training is, until a pandemic hit. And many of those Europe-based offerings went online. Mm-hmm. So I think I've done 3 trainings through IEEC, which is the International Association of Conference Interpreters. And I'm currently, as I said, as we speak, today is actually the day off after the first module, participating in the 2-week Cambridge Conference Interpretation course, which has been running in person for 35 years. And this is the 36th year, and they're running it remotely.
Is this the first year they've ever done it remotely?
Correct. So huge shout out to the organizers that instead of canceling, they, you know, very quickly pivoted to running this remote edition, which they've never done before. Mm-hmm. So I'm participating in that from here in Colorado. So for me, this course is both really, really, really challenging, but also probably one of the best professional development things that I've done in a very long time. So now that I am participating in that training, I can tell you that although I very much hope to do that type of course in person someday, and of course there are many advantages to being there, I actually see three advantages to doing something like that remotely, which are, number one, it of course is less time consuming because I didn't have to travel to the UK for it, although I would have loved to do that actually. Number two, it's less expensive because I only pay the course fee, not my travel and lodging. And for example, in this case, I think my travel and lodging would have been 2 to 3 times the cost of the course registration.
As you're talking, yeah. I was thinking that because I know for conferences, which I'll talk about later, that it kind of, you know, like it's 3 days or 4 days, but if it's a 2 week course, I can see being in a foreign country, you know, even if you're comfortable there, having to pay for lodging and everything for 2 weeks is quite a huge, you know, it's a huge investment.
It's a big hit, right? You know, which I was prepared to do, but I just think for anyone out there who is looking at these longer, you know, 2 to 3 week courses, which I think are more common in the interpreter training world, maybe, that really it's not just, oh, it saved some money because I didn't have to go there, that I had actually budgeted, you know, 2 to 3 times as much for my travel and lodging as I had for the course registration fee. And here's my new insight. It can be really liberating to participate in something that you are intimidated by when you're just on the other side of a computer screen instead of the other side of a desk. So as an example, I'm probably the least experienced person in the Cambridge interpreting course. The instructors are really high profile people. I won't give examples because they like to keep it kind of confidential. But let's say they're very the kind of people that it is embarrassing to mess up in front of. And I now see, which I didn't before, that number one, it's easier to take feedback over the computer than in person, especially if it's critical feedback, you know, that you think like, this person isn't watching me start sweating or trembling or whatever. I'm just on a webcam.
And maybe it's easier for them too, to give you actual...
I think probably so.
Yeah.
Right.
To give real critical, in a nice way, but critical feedback.
Right. And I think that course, for example, has the reputation that like, you're there for them to tell you the hard truths.
Right. Okay. You know?
Like you're, I mean, they say at the outset, it better be hard. That's what you're paying us for. You know,
right.
What would you learn if we just told you like, it's good enough.
You know? Right.
So, and in this, so I think it's right. Easier to take feedback. And also I may never meet some of these people in person. And at the very least, I don't have to go sit next to them at dinner when they just heard me totally crash and burn in a really difficult speech where I was interpreting into French, for example.
Like, well, so yeah, so I guess the pros and cons are, the con is you don't get to have dinner with them, but the pro is what you just said.
Right. That, I mean, we've done some really hard speeches and where I'm interpreting into French and at, you know, and there are points that I think, oh my gosh, I'm completely lost. And then, you know, the teacher who's evaluating me, I just think, okay, they told me objectively what they thought of it. It's not like I need have to go have a drink with them in the bar.
And look them in the eye.
Right. So that's something that I wouldn't have really thought of before, that whereas, you know, you think of these intensive in-person events and that like the best part is that it's like summer camp for grown-ups, you know, you're together every second of every day. But in this case, I find it really freeing that when I'm out of my comfort zone and it shows, I just log off the computer at the end of the day, walk from my office to my house, you know, rather than thinking like, oh, great, tonight's the, you know, boat ride dinner with the whole group. And I just made a total idiot of myself in that last speech. And now I have to go face everybody.
I have a quick question for you too. Sorry. About another thing is that, was there any price difference? Like, would that be a pro too? I don't know. Was there a price difference in what you would have paid in person as opposed to what you're paying virtually or?
There was, and I don't want to give the exact numbers because I don't remember, but they did also decrease the price because their costs were less. I mean,
Okay.
they've set up a really, really good infrastructure. So we're, for example, they decided to use it as an opportunity to teach and learn remote interpreting. So we're using a remote interpreting platform.
Okay.
But I think my guess would be that because their costs were lower, but it was also the actual registration fee was less expensive.
Okay.
So that's what I've heard similar things from other freelancers too. So for example, I talked to a student of mine who went to an online networking event that was like speed dating, where it would actually cut you off after 12 minutes with one person. So this was through a French American Chamber of Commerce near where she lived, and it was sort of interesting. It was literally like speed dating. You put a profile online, and then people invite you to one of these individual networking sessions that lasts 12 minutes. But it literally, like, your screen goes dark after 12 minutes. So she said, "Look, like, isn't one of our worst fears when we go to an in-person networking event that either we will never find anyone to talk to, or we'll get stuck way too long talking to the wrong person?" And in an online situation, I mean, I think, raise your hand if you've ever come home from a networking event and said, it was minimally beneficial because I ended up talking for an hour out of the hour and a half session to someone who was not at all the kind of person I was looking to meet. So in an online situation, I feel like that's a lot less of a risk. And she and I even agreed, and this might sound weird, but if you have even like minimal social anxiety, maybe this is helpful. If things turn weird, you could just disconnect. Just like pretend you're having a connection problem and log off. I mean,
Can you hear
why
me now?
not?
Can you hear me
Yeah, exactly. Right. You're breaking up a little, click.
now?
Chances are you're not going to see that person again in the real world. So I think to me, the real takeaway there is, although I very much miss the in-person world, I also find the online stuff very liberating in that way. That like at this interpreting course, when I do something that's really challenging and I didn't do as well as I hoped to, it's like, oh, well, now it's lunch break and I get to go for an hour walk alone from my office instead of thinking, oh, geez, I just want to go hide in my hotel room. And now I have to go have lunch with everybody. So, Eve, what about you? How have you been doing with online networking in this odd time?
Yeah, so I've attended several events, and one of them I wanted to talk about was it's a local women's group that I've a local women in tech group that I belong to that's in my local area, which is for our listeners who are new, also Corinne's local area. I'm just that, but I mean, I'm focusing on the local aspect of that. But of course, it's all still virtual, even though we're local. So I had been meaning, quote, meaning to attend an in-person event for a long time and had never gotten around to it, because this real life got in the way. And then the pandemic hit, and then their most recent event, after being cooped up for months, I thought the virtual get together sounds great. As opposed to when I wasn't able to find the time to go to the in-person events before the pandemic. And so one thing was time saving, I guess. Of course, the getting there didn't involve driving across town, but I want to have an aside here that now that could be a good thing, having to drive across town, because we're all desperate to get out, right? So that depends on your
Right, because
perspective.
like any excuse to get out of the house.
Right. But from a time saving perspective, it took me that whatever 2 minutes to walk to my office and my upstairs of my house and get everything set up to make sure there were no technical issues or anything. I really enjoyed this particular networking event because they had a specific networking app that they used. It wasn't, I want to talk about that a little bit. They obviously had gone either to a vendor or had built their own app or something. I mean, it was not an app. It was on computer. I don't know if they had an app actually, but I did it on the computer. And so, like you said, your student said, Corinne, I was introduced to a new type of speed networking, which I always have loved calling speed dating. For years, we had an event like that at the ATA conference, and I would actually say speed dating without meaning to. Was I looking to date? No. But in our case, we were placed in a virtual room, and every 5 minutes, it would automatically kind of recycle the people, and we didn't do it we didn't pick ahead of time, which I actually liked better. It wasn't like you seemed to say that your students' experience was where you would choose the people you wanted to meet up with, which is good too. I can see that. But maybe the event we did wasn't big enough or something to be able to do that.
And were the groups random?
Yes, it was just one person at a time, and it was random, but they were all local. So that was, you know, there was that connection that we were all local to the Denver metro area. So maybe that was, anyway, I don't know maybe also because it was a local event, it wasn't big enough to just say, pick who you want or something. But I actually liked it. I met lots of different kinds of people, and it was really interesting. And to me, I always thought like, oh, you know, in the back of my mind, I thought, oh, they're local, so I'm interested in meeting that person anyway, you know, even though I didn't have a choice. But so yeah, it was the same thing you said. It was literally 5 minutes and it would count down. And then when it was like, I don't know, 30 seconds left, it turned blue, and then it turned red at 15 seconds or something like that.
Oh, that's so cool. And then it automatically cut you off.
And then what I liked about it too was, that it gave us a way that as you were talking to the person, you could click and say, I'd like to follow up with this person afterward. And if you both did, then you were able to follow up afterward with some other mechanism they had, you know, to chat and stuff like that. But we first kind of met, quote, in person, seeing each other or whatever. Yeah. And that it also let me turn it off, not turn it off, but I could say like, you know, I'm not ready yet to meet another new person. I want to go to the restroom, or I want to get a drink of water or something like that. So, you know, it was kind of, intense, but you could take a break too and not be thrown in with somebody if you need to take a break. Mm-hmm. So I like that. And what I, coming back to what I said, I think what was important here to point out was that the group who set this up leveraged a newer technology to make online networking a little more natural, I thought, like mimicking going up to someone and striking up a conversation in a real life networking situation. And like your student said, not getting stuck, you know, for a long amount of time. And I was thinking, my other fear.
Horrible, but when you think about it, like, I bet everyone has had that experience where you thought, like, you know, I was a little tentative about going to this in-person networking event anyway, and then I kind of got stuck talking to someone who was not at all the kind of person that I went there to meet.
But I was thinking, the other thing that I was thinking as you were talking through that was, you know, I'm sure I've been the person, I've been, you know, for maybe they, and I, once in a while, you know, we've all been that rather other person too, that the person didn't want to get stuck talking to. So in these situations where you can only talk to someone well, 5 or 12 minutes, no one will remember.
Just because you're not the right person. I mean,
yes.
Ago, when we went together to that, I don't want to give too many specifics, but we went together to an international development networking event in Denver. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of really interesting people there, but we were there to try to connect with like small local NGOs that might need a translator. And we ended up talking to interesting people, but no one like that.
Right. Yeah. But I'm just saying that even if we're the one, you know, anybody could be the one that somebody gets stuck talking to, and then you don't want to be remembered that way either. And so that helps us with the 5 to 12 minute max. We can't be remembered as the person they had to talk to for an hour because nobody's talking for an hour. Mm-hmm. So either way, it works on both sides. So yeah. And I've also been participating in some virtual happy hour events that I would call, you know, more pure networking. I attended a couple with our local translators association. I haven't been able to do that lately because I had some conflicts, but I attended a couple of those in the beginning, and those were, you know, helpful and fun. And then also I've attended a couple of those with the French language division of the American Translators Association. And in both of these cases, these have been on Zoom. And I've also seen evidence on Twitter of various language-specific online networking events that were sponsored by the ITI in the UK, which I'm not a member of those, so I can't speak to those. But it seemed like the comments that people said on Twitter, they seemed really excited about those events. So
it seemed very positive. Yeah.
Yes. And so I was just saying for our listeners, you know, look for events of those types online. You know, use your professional associations as a resource.
Not that people are necessarily going to post all their negative feedback online, but I really feel like of people who have taken a chance on, you know, larger scale online events, mostly people have said, I got more out of it than I expected. It was better than I thought.
A ringing endorsement.
I mean, sort of a backhanded compliment, but I don't feel like I've been hearing a lot of people saying, you know, I'm just not doing networking events until we can go back in person. You know, that
People feel like it's worth their time.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
And that's related actually to my next comment I was going to say, was that for virtual happy hours, I think too, like we're all I think back to the internet, beginning internet days, and we think back and think like, oh, we did this thing, crack me up. Like that was in 1992 or what, or even if it was in 2005, it seemed like 1992, whatever. But I think this same kind of thing is happening with the networking, that is all evolving pretty quickly. But for me, when I think for the virtual happy hours, it was, you know, it was nice to just meet up, but I think it's important too, to have some kind of structure or some kind of icebreaker or some kind of activity.
Oh, right. Instead of like, let's just talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I know, like, for our local Translators Association, you know, doing their sort of virtual happy hours, that, which I think is a great idea, given that they give a theme.
Yes, yes.
Like, yeah. You know, this time, you know, you can, it's kind of nice to just give an update on how you're doing, but to say, you know, this time, how about everybody talks about their favorite new technology tool, or, yeah. You know, what's a productivity technique that's worked really well for you in the pandemic,
right.
And to give it, you know, some structure other than like, how's everyone doing?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was gonna say, like in the beginning, it's just comparing it to the original internet days. Like in the beginning, we were all just happy to see other faces, but then as it goes through, I think people are looking for something a little more structured, at least I would be. Yeah. So the other idea that I had was, I just had this notes about, you know, I was thinking for listeners, I think too, if you have a specific group of people you'd like to network with on a particular topic, I think this seems like a great time to focus on niche topics that, you know, you could connect with others that have the same specialized interests that you do. So you could think of perhaps hosting your own networking event with like-minded people. So I think that since online networking is at these intense levels that that's all we're doing, I think that there's an opportunity to create something new out of it too. Like I was thinking about, Corinne, you talked about this different times, like for people blogging, like in the first days of blogging, you know, being the first one to set up something, you know, gave you an edge. And I think now maybe, you know, coming up with different networking ideas, because we're all kind of scrambling to do it, or nobody has the new best thing yet. And you, mm-hmm. and you know, listeners out there, or you might be one to set up a cool online networking work that really gives you an edge or something, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think if you have an idea about hosting some kind of a networking, go for it. Cause people are still looking for, you know, these kind of, we're still working out the ways to connect in this new environment. And related to that, an interesting factor that I saw from NIMSY, I can never pronounce that. I hope that's right,
yeah,
Renato.
Yeah. I don't know whether you say the D or not. NIMSY.
I know, NIMSY. Yeah. Yeah. They had in one of their recent emails, I think I got it this week, or I read it this week anyway. I was on vacation last week, so I might have got it before that and didn't notice it yet. But they say, those who would have attended, I'm quoting now from the newsletter, those who would have attended an in-person event in 2019 are 600% more likely to attend a virtual event. So I thought that was interesting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I wrote in my notes, ha ha, you know, obviously that, because that's all we can do. And maybe if you were predisposed to attend an in-person one, then you're a person who likes networking. But I just thought that was a good information to note, that people do want to keep doing networking. And then I also wanted to note that NIMSY has a good article on virtual events too, specifically related to events in the language industry.
Oh, and cool. We'll send it to me and we could put it in the show notes. Yeah.
I saved that aside and we'll put it in the show notes. So yeah. So Corinne, even though new platforms are starting to come online, you know, like some of the ones we've been talking about, I think that, you know, some of the old tools, the old in quotes, right, because they're still new in the terms of history, maybe, but they're old tools now in technology terms. I think some of those are still very useful, though, in times of COVID. So what are some of your thoughts on using tried and true platforms in new or old ways, you know, that are still useful for interacting with colleagues, potential clients, or other good networking contacts?
Yeah, so one thing I've definitely noticed is that LinkedIn has been a lot more active since the pandemic. So if you've listened to our podcast for a while, you'll know that I'm always saying, like, I feel kind of chronically underwhelmed with LinkedIn for freelancers.
Uh-huh. Me too.
Because I feel like it's so much more geared towards people looking for or hiring for salary jobs. It's not that I think LinkedIn's a bad platform. I just think it's their focus is really people who are looking for or looking to hire someone for a salary job.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to high-level freelancers, yeah.
Correct. But I will say that I have found the discussions on LinkedIn much more active since the pandemic. And one thing I would really recommend is that now is a good time to do sort of a multi-step LinkedIn campaign, which would go like this. Mm-hmm. Contact, let's say, a bunch of potential direct clients on LinkedIn and introduce yourself and ask them to connect. Then once you've added a bunch of new potential clients or contacts, write a LinkedIn article that is relevant to those contacts and either hope that they'll see it in their LinkedIn feed, or if you're feeling brave, send it to them or tag them. Mm-hmm. So for example, the student I mentioned who went to the online networking event, I suggested to her that she could connect on LinkedIn with a bunch of people she met there. So that's easy, right? Mm-hmm. To say like, great to meet you at the French American Chamber of Commerce happy hour, would love to stay connected here. Then write a LinkedIn article about that online networking event, how it went, what you learned, you
know,
what,
because it's really related to them,
right? Tips for other people, you know, attending similar online events, and then send the article out to those people and invite them to comment, and then sort of reiterate that it was nice to meet them there. So I think you've got a lot of sort of potential touch points. So that's my, you know, sort of, you know, old platform, new take would be LinkedIn. So what are your thoughts on maybe existing platforms that we all know about, but that maybe we can use differently or better during this highly unusual time?
Yeah, one thing I thought of was webinars. And again, I'm saying like webinars are no longer new, really. You know, that's like the same. That trend wasn't as quick as the Zoom trend, but to get all get sick of it. But no, but there are many positive things, webinars. But I think that they have can take on a totally different feel during the pandemic, and they can be much more interactive. And one example that comes to mind is, I think I've mentioned before that I belong to ACES, which is the Society for Editing in the US. And their trainings that they offer with webinars are very lively in general. And what I've also noticed is that the chat boxes go crazy during their webinars. In a fun way. It's actually this constant stream, at least the ones I've attended. So people interact with the presenter, but they also interact with each other. And it's really a great way, it seems to me, to get to know who players are in this particular space and also to interact with them. And that is really networking to me. It truly, in these particular webinars anyway, it's truly mimicked the conversations that you might have in person with those attending and those presenting if you were in person. And
oh,
so
that's cool.
Yeah, I really have appreciated those particular webinars because the interactions so far, like I've said, they almost seem joyful, and because people who are interacting about their shared love of language, and it has seemed to me something really positive. So I think if you can get on a webinar like that with ACES or somebody else, that that is a really good thing to do for networking too. And for me, it's just really educated me about people who are active in that particular space, you know, that I'm an editor and I edit everyone in a really specific niche. And this is a little, they may not think that, but to me, it's a little bit a wider niche, you know, because it's editing a monolingual in the US they're focused on, as opposed to, you know, like we are often doing bilingual type things. So, and another thing that's kind of quote old, but morphing into something new is of course conferences. So as the professional world is adjusting to the changes the pandemic has wrought, some conferences, as we saw in the beginning too, when we were all kind of getting used to this new normal, were straight up canceled right in the spring. And it seems to me
right,
now,
I think that was more common sort of like March, April.
Yes, yes.
That places just said, we're canceling.
Because they were too close to maybe when their events were happening and they didn't have the time to change.
And surely everything would be back to normal by
June. right. But especially if there was events were scheduled for that time period, it was too much, it seems like.
Right.
I understand that from a logistical standpoint. Yeah. But so now with the pandemic continuing, like you said, Corinne, instead of it all being back to normal now, organizations are now offering converting their conferences into virtual events. And so I know this is happening now, like, for example, in our industry, related industries, the ELIA events, Loc World, Women in Localization, and or Women in Localization for events, not necessarily a conference, but and more. So today I got a note from ELIA that they were updating their focus on PM and that they're taking that virtual and kind of adapting that platform. So, and I have to mention the American Translators Association will have its 61st conference. Instead of in Boston, it will be virtual.
Woo!
So 120 speakers, and there'll be lots of cool networking events and more. And so we'll post that link for our listeners too. And I think for any of these conferences, the positive side of this change is, like you mentioned earlier, Corinne, is that people who may not have been able to attend such events due to the travel time or the cost or the lodging, et cetera, can now attend these events from their office or their home and be able to keep costs down, just paying for attendance. And they can still get a lot of educational content and still get networking events that are specifically planned for online interaction. So I think that's kind of cool. And then also for old social media favorites, like you mentioned LinkedIn, I think it's important to continue to be active on your favorite social media platforms, whatever they may be. So that could be, you know, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or whatever you prefer. And then as always, you know, try to merge these online interactions with some kind of follow-up. So if you're networking or you meet somebody new on Twitter, then you follow up and say, oh, would you like to connect on LinkedIn? And then you apply Corinne's approach that she talked about earlier.
The three-step process, right?
Yeah, once they're on LinkedIn. So it does seem in today's environment that we, as sometimes shy translators, may need to be sure to follow up with online networking to capitalize on all these efforts we're making, whether it's in person or, you know, doing all this stuff online. So Corinne, what are some of your suggestions for not losing momentum when you meet someone new or you want to connect further with them in this environment?
Yeah, so I would say the three-step LinkedIn process that I talked about before: connect with those new people, then write a LinkedIn article they might be interested in, and then let them know about it and invite them to comment. I also think now could be a real moment for content marketing, because when you might normally think, like, who has time to read LinkedIn articles or watch videos, people have a lot more time now. I also think a lot of people are just bored. Like, here in the U.S., at least, almost everyone has canceled their summer vacations or, you know, radically scaled them back to maybe staying within your own state or something like that. So we're sitting here thinking, you know, I was supposed to be, like, riding my bike in Italy, and instead the big excitement of my week is the grocery store.
So, I know. I was supposed to be on the beach in France.
I know. So take some chances. For example, offer a webinar for potential clients. Invite a bunch of translators you admire to be in a short-term mastermind or do-it day group, because I think people are more likely to say yes, and it's lower risk when you only know them online. So for example, I've been approached by a couple of translators to be on their podcast, which is something that normally I don't always have time for, but now I do. And it was really fun to talk to someone new. So I think the only caveat I would say there is, you know, just like my family does animal fostering as well, and just like we say to everyone, you know, just make sure that this puppy that you're adopting, that when some point in the future the pandemic is over, you still want a dog. Make sure you have the time to keep all this going post-pandemic, if it's something like a blog or a podcast that would require that, or just plan on it lasting 1 to 2 months. You know, just say, I'd like you to invite you to be in a mastermind group, and we're going to meet 6 times. And in a way, I think sometimes people are more attracted to that because they don't feel like, oh, great, now I'm going to be sort of stuck in this thing for the rest of my life. But actually saying, I'm going to do a, you know, 4-week video series. We're going to do this group that's going to meet twice a week for a month. That could be good.
I actually like that about, I've seen some podcasts, I can't think of which ones they were right now, but in different industries, whatever, the people have said that, like, it's a, you know, it's a limited thing. We're going to cover
10
this
episodes.
Thing.
Right, yeah.
Like we have a purpose. We're going to fulfill our purpose, and then we're going to move on.
Right.
So yeah, I think that's good advice.
Yeah. So Eve, over to you as far as, you know, keeping it going with people that you're,
I don't know.
Meeting.
Well, one thing, I don't know if it answers that question exactly, but one thought I had was, it's kind of an old idea that I think we can kind of apply to these kind of weird virtual lives we're living right now, is the same idea of go to where your clients are. We talk about different times, like, you know, if we were talking about in networking, we'd say in-person networking, we'd say, oh, go to a client-based, you know, go to a client-side industry conference or whatever, which we talked about before. But I think here we can think about go to the platforms or forums or other virtual locations where the people are that you want to meet. So if you focus on a certain industry, for example, and the potential clients in there use WhatsApp a lot, then make sure you're on WhatsApp or something like that. Kind of applying that same maxim to the virtual world, the even more virtual world that we're in right now. And also, I think, as I mentioned before, I think just kind of try to think of new ways to connect and even be willing to be a host or a moderator for different types of in networking or, you know, online things. And so for my book club for translators, I'd actually thought of that and had implemented it just before the pandemic took hold. So that wasn't really related to the pandemic. But I think it's been something that's been a bit different for people. And I think it's been appealing to certain types of people during the pandemic. And actually several members told me that they really appreciated that it's given them kind of some, you know, social interaction with different people who like the kinds of things they like and a little bit out of the
interesting.
A little bit out of the normal translator interaction. So I do think it's important to try new things and take this challenge as an opportunity to maybe create something new.
Great.
So Corinne, what is your recommendation for an out of the comfort zone idea for online networking for our listeners right now that might just work?
Yeah. So I have a couple ideas. First of all, I think you have a better chance right now of sort of picking high profile people and just cold contacting your dream clients. So here's an example. A translator was asking me for advice who wanted to translate a book for a fairly high profile publisher. And she already knew that the translation rights were available for her language. So it seemed like it had a chance of success. And I said, look, I mean, I'm not going to say the name of the publisher, but look up their foreign rights editor on LinkedIn and just message them or ask if they have time to talk to you on the phone. Like normally I would never suggest that. And now I think, you know, why not? That would normally seem sort of like invasive and with little chance of success, but why now? Why not?
This is so interesting. I have to interrupt you because literally yesterday I am your student. I'm not, I'm a different person,
but I looked up a
foreign rights editor on LinkedIn and I did that exactly. I messaged them and said, hey, you know, I've been looking at blah, blah, blah. So that's super interesting. And I kind of felt that same kind of freedom, you know? So interesting that we were doing the same thing.
Yeah. So I think sort of reaching out to, you know, dream clients right now has a better chance of success. Or do a short series. Here's another idea that you guys can steal. If you're a beginner translator, beginner freelancer, do a short series of video interviews with translators you admire and frame it as career advice for beginners, but ask them things you want to know. So I did that a lot in the early days of my blog. Like I feel like when I started writing my blog now, you know, 12 years ago, I got a lot of great career advice for myself because I interviewed high profile experienced people and asked them what I wanted to know.
Because lots of other people want to know that too. So
right. And Eve, maybe like the author interviews for your book club, I don't know whether you would have had the, you know, gumption to ask. Well, I think for you, you probably would.
Well, the first one, I have to tell you, I think I mentioned that before, but I do want to say the first person.
They might have said no.
Well, no, the first person, it was before the pandemic really started. And I was laughing because I actually didn't realize how great she was. And I think I just would have been intimidated because she was such a wonderful speaker. I would have, and I didn't realize how she actually was kind of high profile. I didn't realize that when I asked
her. I just mean, even though I'm making fun of you, that's one thing that I really admire about you is like, you'll cold call anyone. You're like, whatever. It's just one phone call. Like, what are they going to do?
Cold emailing, at least for the book club. I know, at least for the book club, I've been like emailing them. Some people, and to tell everybody too, as listeners, because that could apply to clients too. Sometimes people don't answer, but most of them have been like, that sounds great. I'm happy to be interviewed by you. And I'm like, cool. Yeah.
Right. But I love that about you, that you'll literally cold contact anyone.
So yeah, well, this has been really fun, I think. At least I've had fun with this discussion, and I hope you as our listeners did too. And I'm super interested in what our listeners have to contribute to this conversation specifically. So please hop on over to the website or and tell us your ideas about online networking. You know, we want to learn more about that from you guys too. And so, or you can tweet or you can email us too.
Yeah, sounds good. So hop on over to speakingoftranslation.com. We're on Twitter at Corinne McKay and Eboda, or you can review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening. And thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you in a future episode.